Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the very last day of July, Anno Domini 2021. And you, oh, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And in 9 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes, don't get the blues. Here comes the news.
Ta-da.
Ta-da. Apple has released security updates to address a zero-day vulnerability exploited in the wild and which will impact iPhones, iPads, and Macs. The vulnerability is a memory corruption issue in the iMobile Frame Buffer kernel extension reported by an anonymous researcher. It allowed applications to execute arbitrary code with kernel privileges. Apple has fixed the bug by improving memory handling in iOS 14.7.1, iPadOS 14.7.1, and macOS Big Sur 11.5.1. The list of devices on which this has an impact includes Macs, iPhone 6s and later, iPad Pro, all models, iPad Air 2 and later, iPad 5th generation and later, iPad Mini 4 and later, and iPod Touch 7th generation. Apple is aware of a report that this issue may have been actively exploited, Apple said in a security advisory published Monday. They did not release any additional information regarding these attacks. Withholding this info is likely a measure designed to allow the security updates to reach as many iPhones, iPads, and Macs as possible before other threat actors pick up on the details and start actively abusing the now-patched zero-day. Last month, Amnesty International and Forbidden Stories revealed that they found spyware made by Israeli surveillance vendor NSO Group deployed on iPhones running the latest iOS release, likely hacked using zero-day, zero-click iMessage exploits. That means not only are they being actively exploited the day they're out and there's no fix for them, but also you don't even have to click on anything to get infected. Project Zero recently revealed that a group of hackers used 11 zero days in attacks targeting Windows, iOS, and Android users within a single year. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that's Bites with a Y, Francis, would like us to remind you, is Apple patches actively exploited zero day. Your choices are, I'm all patched up, I'll patch right away, going commando, baby, Apple, meh, and of course, other. If you said other, or if you just have more to say about this, and we know how you like to talk, you can head on over to soundbites.org. That's Bites with a Y. Francis would like us to remind you. Scroll down on the right under Fascinating Stuff. So far, the second forum down is poll discussion. And so far, at least, the number one item under poll discussion is 31 July 21. Apple patches actively exploited zero day. And, of course, if you have anything else you'd like to say about this, please feel free to give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
It's almost nice to see Apple included in the in the patching. That means that they're finally being taken seriously in the criminal world.
At last.
Took a long enough.
At last.
I did wonder, because the 11.5 OS update, you know, came out last week, and like a day later, 11.5.1, something happened.
Yeah. Yeah, when that .1 comes out, like, within a week,
yeah,
you know there's a big thing coming. So if you have, look, we've talked about this over and over and over again, and still people don't get it. Macs are as vulnerable. Apple
all
products,
systems are.
Right. Are as vulnerable as every other system. All of them are vulnerable. You need to keep them all up to date. Just because you own a Mac, don't get smug or you'll get taken. Do the updates. Make sure you're up to date. And that's as safe as you can be. I mean, there's always the possibility of 0 days and every operating system as well. But at least be as safe as you can be and update. Now, I know that particularly in the Windows world, and believe me, I sympathize, you don't want to be first. Generally speaking, in the Linux and Android and Mac world, and even with last month's screw up in the Chromebook world, putting your updates in immediately is a very, very good idea, because like I said in the news story. These are zero-day exploits, which means that the day they discover it, they also discover that it's actively being exploited.
And it could be being exploited for months. They don't know.
Right. So patching immediately is the right thing to do in that particular
case.
Well,
the one thing we can say is, you know, all systems are vulnerable to attack. The big difference is Windows versus all the others. Is the others get usually patched immediately, like Ubuntu and the rest of them.
Right.
They find something, boom, they're patching it, you know, if that day, if not the next day. Whereas Windows, it could go a couple months or so, and then they yes. compile them up and say, well, here, we're going to throw out this patch, and hopefully it's going to fix some of the stuff that, we discovered 6 months ago.
And because they, I'm sorry, but because they patch it that way, they introduce other problems. That's mm-hmm. one of the nice things about originally only Linux, but now most other operating
Chrome
systems
and-
than Windows, is that they patch piecemeal. Oh, here's a problem. We're fixing this problem
Same
today.
With Apple.
That's
yep.
what I'm saying.
Yep.
With pretty much everything except Windows.
Yeah.
We find this problem, we fix this problem today, and push out the patch.
See, and that's been their biggest problem, and the downgrade of Windows and people not trusting it
right.
is because they do wait yep. so long, whereas the other systems, I'll have a patch for that tomorrow, and you can rely on it.
And every,
Windows has shot themselves not in one foot, they've shot themselves in both feet, so they limp equally.
And every Windows update, every month when they release Windows updates, there's 100 or more updates.
Right.
The joke used to be every month it was a new record, 125 updates, 128 mm-hmm. updates. And they found that many problems, many of them with high severity, that affect so many other things. So the odds of your Windows machine, you know, dying,
yeah.
not rebooting after an update are pretty high.
Well, because they've caused their own
yeah.
issues.
Right.
And they've got nobody to blame but themselves
right.
for their bad
The other issue,
outlook.
Yes, and the other issue is that you have to, I mean, you change your printer driver, you got to reboot your system.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas with Linux, unless you change the kernel, you don't reboot. I get updates pretty much every other day. It says, okay, click here to update. Click.
Yeah,
2 minutes later, I'm done. It's done. I don't even have to reboot. I don't have to do anything. It just happens in the background.
Yeah.
And I keep, if it's a, let's say it's an update to a program I'm using, like Chrome,
mm-hmm.
then yes, I have to restart Chrome.
Yeah.
But I don't have to reboot my system. I don't have to worry that, holy moly, is this thing going to come back or not?
Blue screen or whatever.
Right, right. Don't have to worry about any of that nonsense. It just automatically happens and you're done. Chromebooks, you do have to reboot, but you don't have to reboot right now. You know, you can wait. They're because of their security model, a reboot is required because they've updated the ROM. And that has to be a reboot. But again, you can update tomorrow. You know, none of them are so critical that you have to do it immediately. So you work all day. It updates in the background. You shut your machine down at night. You bring it up in the morning, and it's a new system.
Yeah.
Done.
It's patched and ready to go.
Done. So the real problem has been with, and poor Microsoft, they just don't get it. They don't. I mean, they used to say, okay, update whenever you want. And, of course, people didn't want to. for good reason. And then they said, well, we're going to make you update. And then it updates in the middle of giving a presentation. And now you can update right now or pause it for an hour. Well, if I'm in the middle of a... So now I either have to an hour or two before my presentation.
Mm-hmm.
I have to boot up my system, update, and hope it comes back.
Yeah.
Or hope my presentation lasts less than an hour.
Or answer the question again.
Or answer the question.
Do they give you another hour?
Maybe.
Yeah.
So... the problem is their model. And of course, that's the point behind Windows 365. They will update that on their own and then just push that update to everybody doing the, up in the cloud version of Windows. And I get it. I do get it. It's much easier for them if they have no hardware worries. You know, there'll still be drivers for printers. And one or two other devices. But really, it's going to be so much easier for everybody. It's going to cost you a lot of money, but it'll be easier for everybody.
So when it freezes, how do you reboot it?
Well, that's exactly that's right. I don't know. The theory is it won't because they've tested it.
Yep. Yeah.
Oh, I amuse myself.
Uh-huh.
I amuse myself. But at any rate, give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. I was telling Dave, I have to admit, I came this much closer to buying a Raspberry Pi 400.
Still, I keep telling you, you can plug right into that.
Yeah, but I don't have eyes in the back of my head.
You could turn your chair around and face.
Yeah, I could.
Your mic will...
Mic will swivel.
Swivel around. Yeah. Matter of fact, you two could switch seats.
We could. That would do it.
Yeah. You could be looking over there, still on the mic.
Yep. Well, like I said, well, he could do it now because it's air. It does air, not AirPlay. What do you call it?
Yeah, AirPlay.
Yeah.
Remote. Wireless video, yeah.
Yeah.
Now I may end up getting a little chair and sitting over there in that.
Oh, a little coffee
a
table.
Little table to put the computer
up,
on, yeah.
Fold up coffee table.
Yeah. Yeah, Rob, if you're listening.
Yeah, we need a fold up coffee table for fold up.
Then
Steve.
I can relax in the chair.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you can put a little nightstand, put it on wheels, and wheel it around.
There you go. Yeah, or one of those,
things.
Hospital tray stand things that slides in under the bed.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And that was nice because you could adjust the height. And I mean, this was long before all this stuff became ergonomic, right? This was back in the 70s.
One thing I do have to suggest, and I've had a few folks email me and question talking about the Raspberry Pis, is, well, what all can you do with it? For you folks that don't know, just you want to really blow your mind, go and Google Raspberry Pi projects. And there are at least 20 different sites that you can go to that list a multitude of projects that you can do with your Raspberry Pi, whether it's home security or building a quadcopter. To whatever. There are so many ideas out there and helpful videos and step-by-step instructions that will walk you through, again, all these projects for this little piece of plastic that's no bigger than a deck of cards.
Yep.
And have a lot of fun with it. And, don't want to do that anymore? You just erase it and start on another project. It really is very versatile, and don't be surprised, and I'm warning you ahead of time, you won't be satisfied with one, because you'll get that one working on some project and have to order another one. Or be like Nick, who's this close to getting a 400, which is just a few bucks more, but it's all built in with a keyboard.
Yeah.
And you could hook it up to your TV, be sitting in your living room and doing all the programming and everything else.
Let me also say that, and I got to finish my book. I'm writing a book called Getting Started with the Raspberry Pi. And
so you should get started with your Raspberry Pi.
Yeah.
Oh, you have to buy it for research.
Oh, yes.
Now it's tax deductible.
Now it's tax deductible.
It's related to the book.
Exactly.
You need it for further development of your book.
Right. So I actually answer this question. What can you do with it? I have a short answer and a slightly longer answer.
Okay. Yeah.
The short answer is everything you can do with any other computer.
Yep.
The slightly longer answer is that not exactly, because it uses, mostly, you can run Windows on the high-end ones, but
yep.
I really don't recommend it.
Mm.
But mostly it uses FOSS software, free and open source software, F-O-S-S.
Yep.
And that means all of the programs you're used to are available in type, but not necessarily exactly that one. So there are multiple Office suites available on the Raspberry Pi, but not Microsoft Office.
No.
There are multiple graphical editing programs available on the Raspberry Pi, but not Adobe Illustrator.
Right, so, and they're free.
And they're all free. And so, yeah, you have a lot of choices for a lot of software. I was looking at the various Office suites that are available, and even LibreOffice we've talked about, but there's another one called Calligra Suite, and it has word processing, spreadsheets, presentations, databases, vector illustrations, all of that stuff. And again, in order to add it, it's a very difficult process. You go to the Raspberry Pi menu, go to Add and Remove Programs, click on it, and say okay. That's all there is to it.
I don't know.
Google search said, did you mean Caligula?
Yeah.
No, I did not.
But is there a Caligula suite? Because I'd be interested at least in seeing it.
Yeah, no, there's a number of them. Matter of fact, even in those projects, some of them suggest that you load this particular one, say, whatever you're going to do, and then they give you a lot of options. Say you're installing an OS. A lot of them now will say, well, do you also want this, 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 and this? We'll pre-install it for you. You just click it, walk away from it, and come back later, and it's downloaded, installed, and put it all on there and reboot it.
It's got a project management module in it.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
As well as a graphic module. Not many of the Office suites have graphic modules. They'll have, like, you know, I can put a shape in a word processor, but not a full graphics module.
Well, they even have a gamer. I mean, as far as games, various games.
Yeah, he's still talking about Caligula. But now you got me doing it.
Yeah, but Caligula, I mean, for graphics and everything else, it does a decent job of doing it.
I had a question this week about genealogy programs on a Raspberry Pi.
Yep.
There's a program called Gramps. It's a funny name. But it does everything that I understand a genealogy program does.
Ancestry.
And it reads GEDCOM files.
Oh, there you go.
So, right, exactly. And that's the standard way to move stuff around. So what I did this week was my father-in-law, who has passed, had a bunch of genealogy stuff. And before we got rid of his old computer, I copied out his GEDCOM files. I exported his GEDCOM files. So this week I imported them to Gramps. Guess what? Perfect.
All there.
Perfect. They work perfectly. So now, for let's say you get a Raspberry Pi 400, and you've already got a monitor. For $100, you've got a computer you can do your genealogy on.
Yeah. And a lot more.
And a whole lot.
Oh, heck of a lot.
So
more.
Yeah. So Steve is right. I could buy one. And do research on it. Use it actually. And I've done this with the 4, but I haven't done it with the 400. It's different research. Yep. Use it actually as my main driver all week long or a month or whatever it is.
Every research project needs its own computer.
It's exactly. Boy, that's the truth.
Well, you're also using it to gain more experience for your book.
Right. And so, yeah, that's the point.
Hands-on experience. I mean, and you, if you know, if you get folks reading your book and all of a sudden ask questions and that, and they, you know, emailing you, you know, with, well, what about this or that? Having already used the device, you've got the experience.
Yeah. The only problem with all of that is that I do not have enough room on my desk for two computers and a cat. So
get the cat her own computer.
I've said this before. I have regular round doorknobs, but she can open the door. So even if I close the door, she's right there.
Opening
the door and coming in and jumping up and moving stuff around. And so I've learned.
Well, you got to build her own shelf.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. She has a separate, there's a whole other table right there. No. She doesn't want that one. She wants to be next to me.
Yeah, well, that's where you've got to get one of these shelves.
Yeah.
Like an arm that you could put a shelf on.
I've got the arm for the TV now because she was very close to knocking that off the table.
Well, I've got an arm that it can do two monitors. Yes. You could always have the monitor on one and build a shelf on the other one.
Actually, I have that now.
I've got another one.
Oh, there you go. So, yeah. So,
looks like Gramps also runs on Mac and Windows.
Yes, it does. It runs on everything. And it's free. It's absolutely free, and it does everything that everybody needs it to do. All right, listen, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and with you. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free, 1-800-790-0415. We'll be right back with the longest-running computer show in the known universe at Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Before I get to news, let me remind everybody that tomorrow night is the lounge meeting. Go to soundbites.org/lounge at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, and you'll see a link to the lounge itself, the video chat, and we'll be there courtesy of Mastermind Lounge, and we'll be there doing taking your questions and chit-chatting about life, and it'll all be good. In the meantime, I will read a news. While I'm reading the news item, please give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free, 1-800-790-0415. So you may have gotten this weird email from Google this week. A security update will be applied to Drive. If you go to your Google Drive at drive.google.com, you'll also see a message saying on September 13th, 2021, a security update will be applied to some of your files. You can even see a list of the affected files, which have all gotten an unspecified security update. So what's this all about? Google is changing the way content sharing works on Drive. Drive files have two sharing options, a single person allow list, where you share a Google Doc with a specific Google account or multiple Google accounts, and a get link option where anybody with a link can access the file, whether or not they have a Google account. The get link option works the same way as unlisted YouTube videos. It's not really private, but theoretically not quite public either, since the link needs to be publicized somewhere. The secret sharing links are really just security through obscurity, and it turns out the links are actually guessable. Google knew about the problem of guessable secret links for a while and changed the way link generation works back in 2017. Of course, that doesn't affect links you shared in the past before 2017. So, and soon Google is going to require your old links to change, which can break them. Google's new link scheme adds a resource key to the end of any shared Drive links, making them harder to guess. If you head to drive.google.com/drive/update-drives in a browser, you should be able to see a list of your files on which this will have an impact. And if you mouse over each one of them, you'll see a button on the right. Actually, I believe it'll be a button if it hasn't happened. You'll see a button on the right to remove or apply the security updates. And if it's already been applied or whatever, that means if applied means the resource key will be required after September 13th, 2021, and will mostly break the old link, while removed means the resource key isn't required and any links out there should keep working. Not letting third parties create a list of all your unlisted files is a good thing, but don't confuse this link change with any actual security. You should never share anything over the unlisted or get link features on YouTube, Google Drive, or Google Photos if you actually want it to be private. Secret links are just security through obscurity, and even with Google's upgrades, they should not be considered secure or undiscoverable. This arrangement is totally fine for casual documents, but always assume that anyone in the world can read an unlisted file. If you're okay with that, fine. But if not, use Google's actually private account-based sharing options. So, if you share something with the get link option, it is not private. If you share it directly with the allow list,
mm-hmm.
where you pick somebody from your list and say this person can
and
look
at
this
file. And you can pick more than one?
And you can pick as many as you want.
Mm-hmm.
That is secure.
Okay.
So you just need to be aware.
Yeah. Sure.
And that allow list, the secure allow list, does require a Google account. Those are free.
Yeah.
So it's not that big a deal. But that's the way that works. If you're not using that, then it is an obscured but not really private link. So do you worry about publicly exposed documents, pictures, and videos? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. And that is not just for Google Docs, but also for Google Photos and for YouTube videos. Be amazed that the number of YouTube videos that are up there should, in fact, be private.
But aren't.
And are not.
And they could be all of a sudden become very public.
They could become very public very easily. And the same is true of Google Docs. Excuse me, Google Photos.
Yeah.
There are a lot of pictures that really should be private.
Like the old
photos and videos, because you can put videos on Google Photos.
I remember the old days back at Kodak.
Oh, yeah.
And where they used to develop the photos. Well, a lot of them you couldn't send back through the mail. It was illegal because of their content.
Right.
And some of them would wind up on...
Oh, I don't doubt that.
The walls.
I don't doubt that. The fact is that any place that did local processing, so you used to be able to take it to places and it would process it right there and you'd go pick them up there, then they could process anything they wanted to. That was up to the individual store to do that. But if you dropped it off at a kiosk or whatever, they sent it to Kodak and Kodak would then send it back to you. Well, it was illegal to send certain types of pictures through the mail.
Mm-hmm.
And Kodak doesn't care as much about you as they care about being legal with the United States government.
Yeah.
If they have to make that choice, they make it for them and the government.
There was contracts in the balance
exactly.
There.
Exactly. So you wouldn't get those back.
Mm-mm. Nope.
And
it
was pretty funny.
I had
some people who came to me at one point, a person, I will not even name the gender of that individual, who said, I was supposed to get back some pictures and some are missing. I said, well, before I tell you, sue them or call them or do something with them, were these pictures that perhaps would not be public? And that person blushed and said, well, yes. I said, well, here's why.
Yeah.
I was always mad when they printed a black picture.
Yes.
That it was overexposed or, you know,
or underexposed. Right, white
or blurry as all get out.
And they charged me for that print, even though it was obviously bad.
Right.
Well,
that was probably easier than explaining. We didn't print these 17 photos out of your 18 roll because they were crap.
Because they're all pictures of your thumb.
Yeah.
Well, a lot of it was just through a machine. You know, I mean, the machine
right.
did it.
Right.
Do, and it would autofocus and, you know, everything else.
And then for a while, of course, they had the self-serve machines.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
At a lot of places. And that meant you could print whatever the heck you wanted.
But again, you know, you got to watch who's around you.
And that's a little scary, too, because you plug your phone in. It opens your entire photo library to pick the one you want to print. It opens your entire photo library.
Yeah, exactly.
So put the ones you want on like a flash drive and only those ones.
That's exactly right.
Or, you know, print them at home.
Yeah, really.
I did get my wife a home photo printer. then she let the ink dry out. So I bought new ink, and she let the ink dry out, and it needed new heads, and so I stopped buying new photo printers.
And then
she complains that she likes printed photo albums. I'm trying.
Yeah.
But you can buy them now, right? Yeah. Through either Apple Photos or Google Photos.
Yeah.
You can
just...
Well, that Canon printer looks really interesting. The one you fill the tanks yourself.
Yeah.
Epson has new EcoTank like that. Yeah, it's a bulb of ink, and you squirt it in there. And how many people are going to make just a horrible mess?
Yep.
But it is less expensive. So the joke is that the typical ink cartridge you get is half a milliliter, .5 liter. So, I have my liter bottle here. So 2,000 of those. and you pay $20 for it. So somebody did the math, and that's $5,000 a gallon for printer ink.
Right.
So a lot of the inkjet printers are now advertising larger tanks. A lot of them you can now put a bottle of ink in it instead of needing to replace the whole cartridge. Although the one nice thing we always liked about HP cartridges is the print head and the ink were in one cartridge, so it was a little more expensive. But then you got a new head with every new ink.
Right.
Because usually your heads get clogged with ink and dry out. And you might have plenty of ink in the printer, but the heads don't work. And replacing the heads is a lot more expensive.
Yeah, my sister-in-law, when my father-in-law passed, she took his photo printer.
Yeah.
And about 2.5 years later, she called me up and said, "It's not working." I said, "When was the last time you used it?" She said, "This is the first time." I said, "Throw it away."
Yep.
I mean, you're kind of done at that point.
Tried out, yeah.
If it had never been used, that's okay.
Yeah, that's...
But he had been using it quite regularly, so there was ink in the system.
In the lines and
And for 2.5 years, it just sat there caking up. It's just, there's nothing you can do at that point.
Mm-mm. Yep, so, best advice, throw it out. We did have somebody with a question that wanted to know, where's the best place to buy a Chromebook?
That's a lovely question. There are a couple of the big box stores that used to have them available to look at.
And test drive.
That's nice to be able to look at something. Yeah.
Right. So you should probably do that. You can also buy them everywhere online. Every place from Amazon to Google Store to pretty much everywhere. But, of course... all other things being equal, my suggestion is always, if you do use a big box store to do your test drive, it kind of obligates you to at least think about buying it from that place.
Yeah.
And you'll find that the prices are fairly comparable all across the board. It might be a little cheaper online, but you'll pay shipping and yada yada. So. But you can look at several of the big box stores.
And you got to check out the layouts, too. Just like back in the day with the laptops. I mean, they have different layouts. Like Steve's his laptop there has a bigger mouse pad area versus some that, have a very small one. And, what size screen.
Right. Yep.
You know, there's a lot of different features, and you got to put down, again, doing your homework, make a list of what you really need, what you'd like, and then do your shopping and see where you can get. You're not going to get all the items that you probably put on your list, but the key ones.
Right.
And part of the problem is because we've sold Chromebooks in our store, there's hundreds of different models.
Yep.
So if a customer knows what they want, we can order it for them.
Right.
The problem is, I want a Chromebook. Okay. As Dave said, what size screen? How much storage?
Do you want onboard graphics or dedicated graphics?
It's almost worse than the Windows world.
Yeah.
at least in the in the Mac world, there's four consumer machines and four pro machines, and it's a little easier to just, then you get into configs of how much RAM you want and how much storage you want. But we're going to start selling more HP models, and even a large well-known company like HP, they've got hundreds and hundreds of models. So we've started selling them into some of our corporate accounts that they do HPs for their Windows market and Macs in the graphics department. And they said, "Well, HP's got this extended warranty service. For $50, you get 3-year warranty on it." Nah, they're disposable. They break, you throw them away, you buy a newer one because it's better.
That's for the corporate world. That's absolutely true.
Yeah.
For an individual, $50 is not a bad amount of money to spend on a. on a thing like that.
Because they're going to hang on to it for 6-7 years at least.
Right. So in general with Chromebooks, you don't need a high-end model for the average user. And the average user doesn't play high-end games, doesn't do high-end audio and video editing.
Graphics.
Things like that. They do word processing a little bit, and they do spreadsheets a little bit, and they do email, and they do web browsing and that stuff. You can get away with a fairly low-end Chromebook to do those things. The minute you start adding other things you want to do, then it's going to cost you more money. So when you go to buy one, know what you're going to use it for.
Mm-hmm.
And that will help the person who's doing the selling to steer you to a... Look, they want you to be happy with your purchase because, A, it's much less hassle for them, and B, you will be happy with that store and come back to buy more stuff. That's just common sense. So the more you help the salesperson to help you, the better off both of you are. All right, let's go to the phones. Our first caller is Andy from Greece, New York. Hi, Andy. What's up?
Hi, guys. Got a question about my wife's laptop.
Yeah.
It's a Windows box, HP. We keep getting this little message pops up in the notifications bar on the right-hand side. We need to fix your Microsoft account, parenthesis. Most likely your password has changed, close parenthesis. Select here to fix in shared experience settings. The password didn't change.
Well, that's just the most likely reason.
Yeah. One of the things we've started seeing is Microsoft has started bundling OneDrive with everything.
Yeah.
And now it's coming with Windows updates. And so what I have found that to mean is that OneDrive is installed, it's not logged into your Windows account, and so that needs to be fixed.
Right.
From Microsoft's standpoint, that needs to be fixed. You must log into your OneDrive account.
Okay. So if I don't want to use OneDrive, I can ignore this.
Well, my suggestion would be to log into OneDrive and not use it. That way you'll know if that was the issue, and the error message will go away.
Or even uninstall OneDrive, if you can.
If you can. I don't even know if it'll just reinstall again.
Probably.
So you don't have to use OneDrive. There's no magic formula. Windows will not stop working if you don't use OneDrive. But logging into it is the easiest way to make sure that that was the error and that it goes away.
Okay. All right. Well, I guess that makes sense to a point.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, it makes Microsoft sense.
And is that sense at all? Oh, well.
Yeah.
I'm surprised that Steve is here this week. I would have thought he'd be out in Oshkosh.
Yeah, I really want to go to Oshkosh one of these years. The Experimental Aircraft Association's annual show.
What kind of an acronym is EAO? You can't even say it.
EAA.
Oh, Association.
Air Ventures is the name of the show. So Oshkosh, Wisconsin is the busiest airport in the world for this week. Something like 1,000 takeoff and landings a day.
Wow.
It's just a ridiculous number of airplanes. And it even though it lasts a whole week, you can't see everything.
No, you can't.
The annual rocket launch show from National Association of Rocketry finished up on Friday, so I went to that last weekend. It's Oshkosh is one of those big things that you really hope to go see, and then the Large Dangerous Rocket Ship show LDRS
that I would like to see.
That's in the Bonneville Salt Flats. Started yesterday or yeah, Wednesday. And so the people have been posting pictures of that. I think they have a 100,000-foot waiver because there's nothing around.
Yeah, right.
But, yeah, there's so many so few weekends in the summer and so many things to do that
Well, the Bonneville Salt Flats, you could do all year long.
Yeah. Well, they usually go to Black Rock Desert, but that's been flooded the last couple of years.
Yeah, yeah. All right, thanks, Andy.
No problem.
Thanks. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Yeah. There's so many really cool things going on in so few weeks, and it's hard to be able to get to everything.
I saw a guy who he was posting videos, and he got a check ride in a pre-war DC-3.
Nice.
And they lined him up on the runway or on the taxiway, and ready to turn onto the runway, getting clear. And the ground marshals put a Cessna behind him.
And that was dumb.
Part of what you do when you're waiting to get on the runway is do your engine run up to make sure your engines are working.
That's your job.
And he blew the Cessna away.
Yeah, I bet he did.
And so the air marshal comes running up, you know, giving him the cut your engine sign. So he's like 50 feet in the air and 200 feet in front of this airplane, tiny little airplane behind this giant passenger plane. And so he doesn't know what's going on. In the after incident reporting, he says, "What should I have done? We shouldn't have run your engines up." You're supposed to run your engines up there. You shouldn't have put the airplane, little tiny airplane right behind me that I couldn't see. You shouldn't have run your engines up.
No, he's right.
That's not the way it works. And somebody else had posted a video of the plane, the little plane, and so there was no damage to it, but it did start getting blown a little bit.
Yeah, I bet. All right, to the phones, Don from Pittsford, New York. What's up, Don?
Hello. I spoke with you gentlemen last Saturday about the dreaded blue screen of death. Your device ran into a problem and needs to restart. And finally a workaround of disabling the driver signature enforcement, why everything seems to be fine.
Right.
However, another problem occurred not long after, which I'd like your help with. And that is with the computer working as it should, I went to Windows Update, and there were two updates, important ones to be installed. The first one installed just fine, normally, and the second one I thought installed, but it didn't. And I kept coming back, and it was still listed, and I tried it two or three times. And then trying to shut down the computer, a screen sign came up which was install, update, and restart, or install, update, and shut down. And it went through this whole cycle. So I'm wondering on this one update, which seems to be causing the problem, and I can identify it for you, if you can tell me what to do, because my solution, and I think it is not a good one at all, is simply to check the option, do not install Windows updates for 30 days. But everything works
What's
fine.
The update?
The update is 2021-07, cumulative update for Windows 10 version 20H2 for X64 based systems, parentheses KB5004237.
Yeah, I'm seeing a lot of people having the same issue.
Yeah. At this point,
22 updates are in that cumulative update.
Right.
Well, it does take a long time to try to install, and you watch a percentage counter go by. What's the solution? What's the workaround?
Honestly, and I hate to say this, the workaround is what you suggested. Pause updates until they fix it.
And hope another update fixes the problem that's preventing this update from getting in. One thing you could try to do is manually download that one update and install it outside of Windows Update.
How do you do that?
You have to go to the Microsoft Update Download Center and
pick and choose.
Usually search for that KB number and you'll find a download window. The trick is knowing exactly which version of Windows you have and which update that it to download.
Where would I find exactly which version of Windows I have?
In the Settings app under About.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
And then you want to go to downloads.com. Microsoft.com. The easiest way to get to it.
Okay. Very good. All right. Anything, any other words of advice?
Pray.
in general, this is the same issue we've been talking about forever. Almost no Microsoft update goes cleanly for everybody. Because there are so many permutations and combinations of
systems,
possibilities of hardware, there's unfortunately no way to say, here is your exact issue, fix it, boom, done.
How about the option for drivers update? Should that be done?
If it will update your drivers, then yes. All right, listen, we gotta go.
Okay.
Those are the things to do. Thank you. We're going to take a quick break. Be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and with you. You're halfway through the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That means it's 59 minutes after the hour. We are Soundbites, and we are right here on the truly great and truly grateful to you that we're member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you on the other side.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District, Jazz 90.1.
On Instagram at WGMC Jazz 901.
Welcome back to America's longest running computer show, Soundbites, on member supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966 Jazz. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 8 minutes after the hour, we're hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. Before we get to the phones, two quick announcements. First, don't forget, tomorrow night at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, go to soundbites.org/lounge and join us for a video chat. We do that from 9 to 10 p.m. every Eastern Time every Sunday night. And secondly, the bank of phone calls is full. So if you get a busy signal or you get shuttled around somewhere, call back. So we will get through them as we can. Our first caller this hour is Brian from Sodus Point, New York. Hi, Brian. What's up?
Hi there. I got two questions. One, I think, is a hardware problem, which you guys don't usually deal with. And the other one's a weird connection, internet connection problem. The hardware question, the lower rank of keys on my Hewlett Packard laptop, which has been a trusted servant for about 4 years now, is suddenly generating more than one key when you press it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a little bit in the second rank. Like you press an A, you get an A and a Z.
Have you tried using any canned air on it?
Blow any craft
out.
I've
not done that yet.
Yep.
But it's multiple keys. I've had one key stick. But it's a whole bunch of them. Nothing's installed on the computer.
Yeah. What happens is as you're using the keyboard, because it is on such of a slight angle, if you're dropping stuff, you'd be surprised the stuff we use to clean out of keyboards.
Even just dust.
Yeah. And it all travels down to the bottom of the keyboard. It slowly settles as you're typing. It vibrates down because there is a slight incline. So the best thing to do is take it outside if you can. And, matter of fact, the best thing to do is if you go somewhere where they've got an air hose and just take it and blow it out, boy, you'd be surprised the stuff that comes flying out of there.
Turn it upside down and blow the heck out of it.
Yep. Canned air is the best.
I even have an air compressor at home. So.
There you go. Take it outside and, blow it out. Do it outside because it'll blow all over.
Also, if your compressor has a water filter.
Yeah, make sure there's no water.
Yeah. Inline filter.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got that.
Inline filter is the best.
Yeah, one of the problems with the canned air is if you get too close, that initial shock of the air decompressing the air is cold and compresses and condenses, and you get some water vapor.
Yeah.
Yep. So give that a shot.
All right. And then the weird connection problem, I've been off on a boat, so that maybe that's part of where it came from. I've been off the boat for 3 months. Anyway, when I hook up to my home Wi-Fi system, everything else talks to my Wi-Fi system just fine. My tablet, my iPhone, I've got a Google Assistant. They all talk to the Wi-Fi, no problem. The computer tells me it's connected to it, but there's no internet. And everybody else thinks there is an internet. Why would it do that?
Is the Wi-Fi turned on?
I ran into something similar to this, and it was the DHCP server.
Off the Wi-Fi, I didn't know how to do that. I mean, as far as I know, it's turned on.
Is it a laptop?
Yes.
There is a function within laptops to turn the Wi-Fi on and off.
As a battery saver. It's often a key on the keyboard or sometimes a physical switch on the side.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yep.
You also may want to reboot your Wi-Fi router.
No, I've done that a bunch of times. I mean, because I couldn't figure out what's going on. But I finally decided, because the other thing, actually, no, I used my phone to do a personal hotspot, which is Wi-Fi, I believe, and it connected to that.
Yeah, it's exactly the same problem I had with a customer last week. And it was a DHCP server in the router. It had stopped serving addresses. So the Wi-Fi connected okay, but he never got an address to connect to the internet.
But then why would my phone and my tablet connect to the internet?
Because they already were connected, and their lease hasn't expired yet. So when your router hands out addresses on your network, there's a lease involved where it will, you get 24 hours of this connection, typically. And then at the end of the 24 hours, your device asks again, can I have this address back? And, oh, yeah, sure. But if your laptop hasn't been on the network for a while, then it's been forgotten about, and the DHCP server may not be able to hand out an address to it.
But when I sign into the network, it asks me for the password, which I enter. And it says that I'm connected to the router, but there's no internet. I do connect to it.
You're connected to the Wi-Fi, but not the DHCP to give you an internet address.
All right.
May be the upstream router from your Wi-Fi.
All right.
Turn off your internet router and your Wi-Fi router, both, for 5-10 minutes.
And then turn on the upstream router first, then your router.
The upstream router is the modem when I was on the modem?
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. All right. I didn't know that's called an upstream router.
Yep.
All right. Yeah, I'll try both of those because I really don't want to replace the laptop if I don't have to.
No, right. It's just a matter of getting all three of those systems to once again acknowledge your laptop.
And since the laptop worked with the new hotspot, it got an address properly. All the software and hardware in the laptop is working.
Right. Well, that's what I couldn't figure out. That proved it was working, and then why wouldn't it talk to the router, and yet all the other devices would talk to the router. It's like,
wait a minute.
You know, your router doesn't like my laptop anymore?
You're right. All right, we got to move on, Brian. Good luck. Let us know.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks. Bye-bye. Yeah, the problem with any sort of network connection, and particularly with Wi-Fi, is it's invisible.
Yeah,
and it's hard to comprehend all of the connections down the line.
Yep.
If all you think about is I click this button and I get on the internet,
you probably should turn off all the other devices too, because now suddenly they'll have duplicate addresses. Because when you restart your DHCP server, whatever box that's in, it starts handing out addresses typically at 1, and then the next computer gets 2, and the next computer gets 3.
Right.
So if you've had a computer that's on in 10, by the time you get to your 10th device, that other computer is still already 10, and
it might do that. All right, our next caller is Matt from Rochester, New York. Hi, Matt, what's up?
Hey, what's going on, guys? Great to hear your voices, and it's good to be a part of the show this weekend. I just want to touch on a few points. For the person who asked about the good deals on the Google Chromebooks, I'll have a lot of jealous people when I tell this story. Your local neighborhood office supply store Staples, believe it or not, has really good deals. I walked in there one time on a Saturday, wasn't even expecting to buy a Chromebook. They had one on sale, $99.99. Go home, look it up. It retails for $279. I mean, the deal basically found me. So check them out. And as far as that can there, I noticed that if you go to BJ's, 4 cans is like $10.99. And as far as the other guy, talking about the update issues. I do believe you could have a lot of registry problems. Run the registry sweeper thing in CCleaner. It might give them good results, you know?
Can't hurt. Absolutely. Thanks, Matt.
Yep.
Thanks a lot. Those are good suggestions. Thanks. All right. We didn't talk about the possibility that he's got a registry problem. It's unlikely, but it certainly doesn't hurt.
Well, that's assumed with Windows.
Well, yeah. That's very true. Like I said, many of the big box stores are selling Chromebooks. And the nice thing about, you know, take a Saturday. It's a decent day today. Take a drive around to several of them, and you'll see various different models. And that'll be nice. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Mark from Greece, New York. Hi, Mark. What's up?
Hey, guys. Got a weird problem with the Komodo antivirus. I'm using the firewall and the antivirus together. I've been using it for quite a while now. And I go to do a full scan, and it aborts itself at some point. I don't know. I usually do it in the middle of the night, and it just aborts itself, and then it doesn't complete.
What's the error message?
It doesn't even give an error message. It just says at the top that it says it's been aborted, and there's no message. It just says it's been aborted.
It doesn't generate a text message or anything else?
Nothing.
Or, you know, a message to file?
Yeah. What does it say? So you look in the log, and it doesn't... Hello?
I got to look in the log. I haven't looked in the log.
Yeah, that's where the message would be.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, so look in the log. That should tell you at least how far it got. So you'll know what what program is causing
it. Or potentially, what might have caused it.
Yeah.
Because if I do a custom scan, and I just say, C drive, it goes all the way through fine.
I wonder if it's trying to scan like an A drive, a floppy drive you don't have.
Well, exactly. But without seeing an error message.
Yeah.
So check the log. And you may find that the problem is that maybe it was during an update or whatever, but your configuration changed, and it might be looking for a drive that doesn't exist, or it might be looking for a directory that no longer exists.
Or a D drive, which is a CD-ROM drive.
Exactly right.
And just because you got a CD in there, it's trying to read it, and it can't because it's a CD, read-only.
Right.
Okay. All right. I will do that.
There you go. Good luck.
Awesome. Thank you so much for your help.
Thank you.
I have a similar problem with my FileMaker server that we have it scheduled to auto backup every hour, and then we do a manual backup every day. And the manual backup errors out because it's trying to backup. It scans the list of files and sees that backup file. And then when the hourly backup ran, it made a new backup file, deleted the oldest backup file.
Which you're trying to back up now.
Which gives us an error that it can't back up and stops.
That's not right.
Tell me the error. You can't back that file up, but continue on with the rest of them, please.
Right.
So when I do the manual backup to a different drive, I have to pause the auto backup because it takes longer than an hour to back up the whole server.
Right. All right. Our next caller is Bob from Henrietta, New York. Hi, Bob. What's up?
Good afternoon. For that guy that's going to take the air hose to his computer, be sure he stays grounded.
Good point.
Don't put the ionized air into your computer. Take the battery out so there's no power going through.
I just unhook the keyboard anyways. If you're taking it outside.
Well, the laptop, just take the battery out if you can.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely.
Make sure it's off at the very least. You're absolutely right, Bob. You want to make sure that that you are not, generally speaking, if you're outside wearing some form of decent shoe, you should be fine. But you're absolutely right. Make sure you're grounded.
Yep, definitely.
When I was talking about ground between the compressed air source, at like the hose, and the metal frame of the computer.
Yeah, that
you
too.
You ever see those videos with helicopters over submarines shocking the hell out of
everything? Yeah.
That does wonders for electronics.
Yeah, it does, yeah. Good point, Bob. Thanks.
Have a good day.
And so many laptops especially are plastic cases now that generate static electricity.
You're right. Yeah, there's a whole set of issues with that stuff. Are we not doing broadcasting anymore?
Yeah, we are. But I just got an error message from Facebook that they blocked us during the music for copyright violation.
Oh, yeah.
36 seconds copyright violation. So submit dispute.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, okay. So now Facebook, we just started broadcasting on Facebook, you know, a few months ago. And it was, I have the right to this music. Was the answer. Now you actually have to submit a, they must have got too many complaints from publishers, have to submit a dispute. But we do have the rights for streaming broadcast of the music. We're a radio station.
Well, right, but they don't.
They don't know
it's
that.
It's ridiculous, yeah. Oh, there's a part two stream. Am I on the stream?
Oh, yeah. The YouTube stream, you have to start part two. So when the stream is interrupted, the other end, Facebook and YouTube, will abort. Facebook gives me a little more time to start it again, and I missed it with YouTube, so I had to start a new stream.
I see.
So you should have got notice that the second stream started.
I'm really not staring at that page.
Oh, well, why not?
Oops.
Yeah, that's my fault entirely.
Yeah.
I was exactly.
He's off driven about his 400.
Now, I was looking actually at the number of people who've voted in the poll. Please vote in the poll. We've got 34 votes so far. So far, of course, Apple, is far, far ahead of everything else. But it is important to be patched. It is important to make sure that you are ready to go. And while you're doing that, I will read another news item. If you're an owner of an older Kindle e-reader, your device may soon lose support for an important feature, internet access. In advance of this change, Amazon has been sending out emails to older Kindle owners. I mean, the Kindle is older, not necessarily the owner. The issue is that because a number of wireless carriers are beginning to shut down and dismantle their older 2G and 3G networks in order to focus more on expanding their 4G and 5G coverage, a number of Kindles will no longer be able to connect to the internet via cellular service later this year. The devices most affected by this change are first and second generation Kindles and the second gen Kindle DX, as they were sold without built-in support for Wi-Fi connectivity, which means they are entirely reliant on cellular service in order to download new books and content. And while some carriers like Verizon have temporarily postponed the shutdown of its 3G service, when those older Kindles do finally lose service, which could start happening as soon as the end of this year, users will no longer be able to download new content, though thankfully previously downloaded books that are currently housed on your Kindle device will continue to be available. For more recent Kindle models that came with both Wi-Fi and cellular connectivity, those devices will also be losing cellular support, though they will still be able to fall back on Wi-Fi in order to purchase and download new content. While it may be frustrating to see some older Kindles lose a part of their core functionality, sadly, this was always bound to happen, and at least for first and second generation Kindle devices that didn't come with built-in Wi-Fi, a run of more than a decade is pretty admirable compared to a lot of other modern gadgets. Amazon is looking to help ease the transition by offering discounts toward the purchase of a new Kindle Paperwhite or Kindle Oasis. One caveat is that if you want to take advantage of these deals, you better act soon, because according to the Amazon emails, those offers are set to expire in about 2 weeks on August 15th, the Ides of August. Depending on the specific Kindle model, Amazon is offering a range of discounts with owners of first-gen Kindles with cellular connectivity eligible to get brand new 10th generation Kindles, Oasis, and Cover for free, while owners of more recent Kindles are eligible for reduced discounts. So if you have one of the OG Kindles, you'll probably want to take advantage of the free trade-in before the offers expire. So are you ready to trade in that OG Kindle? Give us a call and tell us why. 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. I am a voracious reader.
I was going to say, you use the Kindle a lot, don't you?
No. I use an Android tablet. And the reason
is,
And the reason is because an Android tablet lets me read Kindle, Nook, Google Play Books, and all kinds of Libby stuff from the library, a bigger variety.
Yeah.
And over the years, I have owned all of those e-readers. And so I still have a library of books in each of those devices stored on their servers. So, you know, I've got a bunch of books at Barnes & Noble. I got a bunch of books at Amazon. I got a bunch of books at Google. And if I were to have any one device that only read those books, I would then be losing out a third of my library.
Yep.
So and I bought an incredibly inexpensive but really terrific Android tablet, 7-inch tablet for $99. And it is amazingly good at all of that stuff. It's fast. It's easy. It's exactly the right size. It's 7-inch paperback size, so it fits in my pocket, which, you know, I like.
Yeah, well, that's what I got my wife for Christmas was a tablet. Because she loves to read. And she loves the convenience, you know, that you can sit there and start reading the book and then turn it off and it still remembers where you left off, you know, marks the page and continues on and boom.
My wife discovered that she discovered two things. One, the family library in just about every device. And two, if she buys books under my name, I pay for them.
Yeah.
Win-win. Winner, winner, chicken dinner.
Winner, winner.
I actually found out something a little annoying. I used to use Libby a lot to get electronic books from the library.
Sure.
Not every book is available electronically.
That's true.
So I've been getting more paper books out of the library. It's nice in Monroe County with the library loan. I'm reading a book that came from Hilton today. but they've got petition signs up because I mentioned it at the library and said that they want publishers to make every electronic book available to libraries. And the annoying thing is that libraries have to buy copies of electronic books just like they do physical books, even though there's no physical limitation. So they have 3 electronic copies of this book to lend out, and that's it. And you know, it took me 6 months to get the new Andy Weir book, Hail Mary.
Yeah.
Then I'm going to finish it tonight, and I hope my next book has made it in by tomorrow.
Exactly. But what I discovered, and I did some research for somebody, and I discovered that there are books that you cannot buy, but are available electronically on the dark web.
Everything is.
Well, everything is, yes.
Yeah, I could easily pirate it if I wanted to, but I want to be legal.
Right, I don't want to pirate anything. Yeah. But it was a weird thing to discover that they are available electronically, just not legally.
Yeah.
It was a weird thing.
Somebody, I remember talking about that when Game of Thrones got real big, that especially outside of the U.S., it was almost impossible to watch or even buy the DVD set when they came out.
Right.
And the way DVDs are region encoded, you can't buy a DVD in the U.S. and play it most anywhere else. And so people were saying it was so much easier for me to pirate this show because I could not buy it.
Right.
And they're losing money because they don't make it available.
Right. Electronic. When people want to buy it.
Yeah, I want to buy it, and I couldn't. Yeah.
And they
can. Yep.
All right. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and with you. It is 29 minutes after the hour. Give us a call, 585-966-5299, 1-800-790-0415. Back in just a couple of minutes with more sound bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And 34 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbite.
Couldn't resist that one.
No, I understand that. We're got back to the phones. Our next caller is Skip from West Henrietta, New York. Hiya, Skip. What's up?
Hello there. My major problem is Gmail has died more or less, or whatever, and I'm hoping you can either help me or refer me to somebody that can. Okay, I've got a desktop, Windows 7, Chrome, and I'm looking for Gmail. And a day or two ago, I went to look at my email, which normally works just fine, which happens to be an old Roadrunner address that got linked to a Gmail address, but it's worked fine for years. Went there the other day, and this big full-screen thing came up instead of my email, and it says, Gmail has combined with Google something or other, or this or that, or fill out these forms and do all this. And I spent hours going through forms and this and punching this and pushing that, and I wasn't making any progress. Some of it I didn't want anyway, but whatever, I went through it. I finally got somewhere trying to transfer my old stuff into this new stuff. They gave me a new password, new everything. And then it said, little box came up in the corner and says, checking, and a little thing next to it going around and around. And I let that check for 24 hours and finally gave up on that. And now I can't get to my email. A couple of things on the web. I can still get to the web, but a lot of the time, or some of these things, when they say, I've got an answer for you, I'll send you an email. How do I get an email? I'm calling about an email problem, but I can't. They want to send me an email.
I think you got scammed, because Google has not done anything like that for years.
Right. So
3 or 4 years ago, they merged their Google accounts and YouTube accounts. But they haven't done anything like that recently.
Right.
So you should be able to type gmail.com and get to your Google Mail.
No, it's not going there. I don't think I could try again, but...
Okay, so here's what you need to try first. Download a different browser. You say you're using Chrome.
Yeah.
Download Firefox. If you can get to your Gmail cleanly through Firefox, and by the way, if you do, the first thing you need to do is change your password, because I'll guarantee you somewhere in that stuff you did, you put in your username and password.
Yeah, there's a little thing, transfer your other account.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So every account you put your username and password in, you immediately go to those sites and change those passwords.
So you may have some sort of malicious extension loaded that is capturing your traffic
information,
sending you to the wrong place.
Yeah.
Right. And that's why you start by downloading a different browser like Firefox or Brave or Opera and connecting directly to gmail.com with that browser. If you get in, then you know the problem is some extension or whatever that was added to Chrome.
Yeah, I guess I've been using Bitdefender, the paid version of Bitdefender, and I guess something got through that.
Well, what happens is sometimes when you add something, Bitdefender says, oh, they did this on purpose. They must really want it. I'll just ignore it.
Mm-hmm. And a Chrome extension, a malicious Chrome extension, isn't necessarily a virus, and so the antivirus programs don't catch it.
Right.
Yeah, okay. And then I have been starting on this camo thing that's related to C-Check, and I'm pissed at that because it keeps blocking everything. So I don't know what I'm doing.
Right.
Anyway, and one of the little things in terms of fixing these things, for a while I've had problems. When I go to a site and it says, how do I fix this? And I said, okay, how do I kill Norton and McAfee, what do you call it?
Yeah.
And it says, you know, push this button, push this button, push this button, and it's fine. But then I get there and it says, you know, push so-and-so button, and my computer doesn't have that button.
Yeah, that often happens when you have a different version of Windows than the one that site.
Yeah. Oh, even some of these, you know, said, I've searched under Windows 7, you know, kill, and then it goes to it and it's labeled Windows 7 kill, but then it's still...
What version of Windows 7?
Yeah.
That's a whole other set of... There are so many different versions and so many different slight changes from version to version, from point release to point release within a version. Yep.
And a lot of times you might get better luck searching for manual uninstall and then the program name. so that you get more direct instructions rather than, you know, saying click the uninstaller.
Well, that's where we've always recommended, as far as Revo uninstaller, for a program to completely uninstall a program, that is by far the best that I have seen.
Yeah, I've gone through some of these uninstall lists, and I can't find
and that's why the manual uninstall instructions are often better.
Right.
Yeah. You know, Norton and the other.
Yeah, but to solve your immediate problem, and you may have more than one, first download another browser, like Firefox. Go to gmail.com, nothing else, just gmail.com on that browser. If you can get in, then you immediately need to change your password there and everywhere else that you put a password into the other browser.
Who knows? They're all over the place.
You have to do that.
Okay. One question
for you. And if they got into your Google account, then they have all of your Google saved passwords.
So you're going to have to change a bunch of them.
Okay, then if I do have this problem, is there somebody I got to go to, or is there some direction I should proceed?
Well,
Security Tango.
Right, you can go to securitytango.com.
Okay.
And download, you know, and go to Let's Dance and then select the Windows Waltz.
I just want to back him up for one second.
You can also go to somebody like Steve and bring your computer to them, and they will do a lot of work on it and charge you appropriately.
Which you sometimes need to do if it's in there pretty deep.
Okay, right. Where is Steve? Where do I go to him if I have to?
Our store is Mac Ave in Victor at mac-ave.com.
Okay. Now, you had another comment you were going to
make? Yeah, I was you're not using both Norton and McAfee, are you?
I am not using any of them. I'm just trying to...
Okay. All right. Okay. No, I heard you say that.
That's more likely you got scammed, because if you don't have those programs and you get a message that there's a problem with them, it's obviously lying.
Yeah, that's where I'm thinking.
And tricked you into doing something bad.
Yep. That's why Dancing the Tango would probably do the best, that if you're not running those programs and it's telling you, well, do this with them and this.
Well, it just said, you know, just pay me.
That's definitely a scam.
Yep.
Sorry, but yes. That's
okay. Don't know how it got in, but I don't know.
It's an ad on a website. So the only way to stop it is to stop going to websites.
Yeah, you didn't do anything wrong. You just got caught.
Yeah, it just happens.
Okay.
It happens to everybody a thousand times a day.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yep. Good luck.
Yep. Bye-bye.
We used to joke with a lot of our Mac customers that if you get a message from Microsoft saying there's something wrong, it's lying because you have a Mac. You don't have Microsoft.
Right.
Then a guy brought a PC in and said he got a message from Apple that he had a problem and to bring his computer in for repair. Okay, I guess we're going the other way now, too.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, that's why the minute he said that McAfee and Norton, I'm thinking, well, are you running?
Right. Yeah, you only want to run one.
And, well, even if you're not running it, and all of a sudden it's saying that you got to do this and this, that's definitely a scam.
Yeah.
Right. You need, in general, anybody can, Skip clearly did nothing wrong. It's not like he, went to a very bad website or something
problem.
Along that.
No,
right?
That's it. Yeah,
and so, you know, it's not Skip's fault.
Nope.
But he does need, and all of us, and that can happen to any of us, and we all need to be aware and, quite frankly, extremely cynical.
Mm-hmm.
Every time you get a message, be cynical.
Well, that's the other issue. It goes back to what I have been saying for decades. He didn't do anything wrong, but like a lot of other people, they get click happy.
Yep.
Boom, 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 boom. And then all of a sudden they go down that rabbit hole and they get themselves in so deep and they're like, oh, wait a minute, what's going on here? You know, have I been hacked or, you know, is my machine being taken over? And, you know, you could be agreeing to things that you didn't really want to.
And creating a new account and merging things together. The more complicated the instructions are, the more likely it is
and
to
confusing.
Be wrong.
And it's meant to be confusing for you. So you sit there, I don't know what to do. And then they get you calling these numbers. And, and that's where you hear other folks being called, call for this tech support. And they get charged $300 and $400.
Right.
And and they don't get squat for support or anything else. If anything, it only bricks the machine that much more.
Yeah. If you're unscrupulous, you can do this. You can get people paying you, say, $50 a week, a month. And then they call you up for tech support and you say, oh, yeah, reboot. It'll be fine. Hang up.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And I've always said that. Most of these scams, they want like $500, $600, $700. If it was $50, that even $100, they'd catch a lot more people. That's you spend $50 a lot easier than you spend $500.
Yeah. Right.
But be very aware. We've talked about this. I got an error message here.
Yeah.
That I had an error with my Windows machine. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not a Chromebook.
Yeah.
So that ain't happening.
Yeah.
And I just clicked off.
It's
and
like,
it was
yeah,
done.
Turn it off, I'm turn done. It back on.
I'm done. But you want to be aware, you want to be wary, you want to be cynical. When you get an error message, position one should be, I don't believe this.
Well, like I've always said, is when folks get those stupid things or warning, oh, your machine has been compromised. First thing to do, turn it off.
Yeah.
Just shut it off, turn it back on, and 99% of the time it'll come back up and it's fine. Just don't go to that website anymore.
Right. And by that website, it really could be any website because these are ads that pop up.
Mm-hmm. And they're buried into good sites.
Into good sites because they do, most of these sites have automated ad services. And if you can get your bad ad into a good ad service, it'll be a while before it gets caught. And that mm-hmm. while could be 15 minutes.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, 100 million people have seen it.
Easily.
And if you catch 10 of those, you've made $1,000.
Yep. And the thing of it is if it gets on that one and goes to another one,
right?
Because you're surfing and it gets passed on.
Right, right.
A lot of those programs are built that, all right, it downloads it to yours. And then once it does, in the background while you're surfing to other sites, it plants it on other sites.
Yep.
I've read some of these exploits will patch the hole behind them when they get in.
Yeah.
So they're competitive bad guys can't break in too.
Yep. So at least you get the whole patch. That's nice.
Yeah.
So that part's
actually
good.
There was I just heard an episode of Security Now. The Justice Department ordered a court, was it in Texas? I think that's where it came out of, to patch the Hafnia Microsoft Exchange bug. So They hired good guys who wrote a program that exploited the bug, loaded the patch, and then left.
Nice. Nice.
Under court order, because normally that's illegal.
Right, so that would be illegal.
Yeah, the good guys have said that all along, that we could go in and patch the hole because there's a hole. Bad guys are getting in, but it's illegal for the good guys to go in, so we won't. So they did it under court order.
And that now, if you got a problem, you talk to the court.
Yeah, so I'm trying to find out how many exchange servers are still vulnerable. That was one that where the problem was found in October, reported to Microsoft, and in March they released a partial patch, and it still isn't completely patched, and they've had more than 6 months.
See, here's the thing: first, never screw around with people's email.
Yeah,
that's number one. Number two, never, ever screw around with a judge's email.
Yeah.
Well, you can if you want to go.
That's how that works.
Really pay a price.
Yeah. What is it? There's a class action suit going about incognito mode in Chrome. It's not incognito from Google.
Right.
It's incognito from your spouse. So we jokingly call it porn mode.
Right.
And apparently
not
during.
Not so jokingly.
Yeah. During opening arguments and discovery and whatnot in the trial, a judge said, what? An incognito mode isn't private? Class adjudicate. We're going to. Class approved. Let's have this class action lawsuit go forward.
Yep. Because I'm part of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Here's a. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ, 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. Microsoft unveiled Windows 11 a few weeks ago, causing an unexpected controversy. Unexpected? I apparently just reached puberty. Unexpected controversy.
New voice.
Right after the announcement. It turns out that not all computers that can run Windows 10 will support Windows 11. Microsoft has precise hardware requirements in place. The move surprised users, especially those with newer machines, who found that the Windows 11 upgrade isn't possible. Microsoft just made it clear that it won't allow Windows 11 installations on devices that don't pass the hardware requirements check. Microsoft's Windows 10 upgrade policy was very different. At the time, the company forced the upgrade on many people. Whether you wanted it or not, a change of pace seems welcome, allowing users to install Windows 11 at their own leisure. But not everyone will appreciate Microsoft's intentions. Microsoft explained in an Ask Me Anything session the policy regarding migrations to Windows 11. The company made it clear that the new hardware requirements are staying in place. Microsoft wants to offer users better Windows security than ever. We know it sucks that some aren't going to be eligible for Windows 11, Microsoft's Aria Carley said. But the great thing is to remember is the reason we're doing that is to keep the devices more productive, have a better experience and better security than ever before, so they can stay protected in this new workforce. Carley went on to say that IT admins and consumers will not have to bother themselves with checking Windows 11 hardware requirements and determine whether the upgrade is available for their devices. Instead, Windows will automatically check whether the Windows 11 upgrade will work on any given machine, and if it won't, not install it. What we've actually done is bring some of that enforcement inbox. So rather than you having to even think about it, your device can be targeted with Windows 11, and it will actually be able to determine by itself before ever being offered and wasting that download whether the update is applicable, Carley said. Carley also explained that Windows users will not be able to cheat their way into the upgrade. Modifying group policy or something like that is not going to be possible. Group policy will not enable you to get around the hardware enforcement in Windows 11. We're still going to block you from upgrading your device to an unsupported state, since we really want to make sure that your devices stay supported and secure, she said. It's always possible that experienced users will find ways to bypass Windows 11 hardware requirements, but you absolutely shouldn't look for any sort of Windows 11 downloads online claiming to work on any device. Hackers are already targeting Windows users with malware disguised as a Windows 11 installer. Please listen to that. Do not download any Windows installer from anywhere. It is a scam. It is malware. Only Microsoft has an official installer, and they will install it automatically. You don't get a choice, and therefore you don't get an option.
And
anything you install will be a scam.
And the only thing available now is the Insider pre-release, right? That you shouldn't install anyway.
Right, unless you're a beta tester.
Yeah.
Unless you're a willing beta tester. Yeah. You don't want to do that. So if you're ready to throw away your old hardware, give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299, toll-free, 1-800-790-0415, just like Joel did from Henrietta, New York. Hiya, Joel. What's up?
Hi, I've got a question about a Chromebook.
Yeah.
Would that load and use TurboTax?
The online version, yes.
I don't know if we see the online version. Oh, the online version of TurboTax.
Yeah. through a website, yes.
Yes,
oh, okay.
It will not run any Windows-based program. So TurboTax has a Windows version and a Mac version of TurboTax. It will not run those. You need to run the web-based version.
Okay, thank you.
Yep, you're welcome. That's the kind of thing that you have to remember. Chromebooks are a different operating system. Just like you can't run Windows programs or Linux programs on a Mac, you can't run Mac or Linux programs on Windows, you can't run Windows or Mac programs on Linux, you can't run any of those on a Chromebook.
Is there a VM available for a Chromebook?
Pardon?
Is there VM software available to install Windows in a VM on a Chromebook?
You know, that's a very good question. And the reason that is a good question is because there's already a VM for Linux.
Yeah.
But I haven't seen separate VM software. Our next caller is Tom from Brighton, New York. Hiya, Tom. What's up?
Yeah, quickly. So for those systems that are too old for Windows 11, how long will Microsoft support Windows 10 for the older hardware?
They say they just recently told their investors that they will continue to support Windows 10 for the foreseeable future.
Okay. Well, yeah, okay.
That's a non-answer. I completely realize that is a non-answer.
Far and foreseeable.
Right, yeah. Exactly.
Next week.
But that's what they've told their investors, because they know that many machines will not be able to run Windows 11, and because they know that some of those machines were purchased, say, a week ago,
yep.
They have committed to at least some longer Windows 10 support.
Currently, Windows support, it will be retired October 14th, 2025.
Okay.
That could change in the future, but that's what it currently is.
Okay, that'll work.
Yeah.
Works for me.
Yep.
Thank you.
Right. Yep. If your Chromebook, by the way, has VMX support, and not all of them do,
mm-hmm.
you should be able to run VMs.
Maybe Wine. Wine you can
run, yes.
Yeah, so in a Linux layer. So you're running Chrome in a Linux layer to run Wine to run Windows.
Right. Right.
A little convoluted.
They also have Crostini, which is really the Linux beta project, and that stuff. So theoretically, GNOME boxes. You should be able to run GNOME, shouldn't you?
Another use.
I'm going to have to try them to play with that and see what happens.
So, well, now the other problem is licensing. So macOS is only licensed to run on a Macintosh.
Right.
People have run it on PCs. They are technically violating the license.
The Hackintosh.
The Hackintosh, yeah. but Windows, the Windows license is a little more broad. It's licensed for a computer. So on your Mac, you can run a VM program, a virtual machine, and then run Windows in that virtual machine.
You still have to pay for it.
Yep.
It's not free.
It's not free, but you can pay unless you try Wine, which...
Wine is not an emulator.
It doesn't emulate Windows, but it lets you run some Windows programs.
Right.
and so without purchasing a Windows license, so that's a possibility.
And of course, if you're a Linux user, even any operating system will run lots and lots of free software.
Yep.
Tens of thousands of free programs.
And there are several tax preparation type programs available for Linux. GNU Cache is one that I've used.
Right.
So you may not be able to run TurboTax on your Chromebook, but you can run other tax software.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a thing that people have to realize. There's a website called alternative2.net. And you can type in, for example, TurboTax, and it will tell you what other tax programs are available on other operating systems. Now, as to how good they are in your particular instance, I am not a CPA. I don't even play one on television. So that we can't help you with. But the programs themselves exist.
And many programs, like TurboTax, are going to with web versions so that they run better on mobile devices, you know, phones and tablets. And then it doesn't care pretty much what OS you're running. As long as you have a web browser, it works.
Yeah, apparently you can run GNOME boxes. Wow.
Nice.
Wow. Of course, you have to have enough RAM and
a
good enough processor. I mean, that's obvious. But that's interesting. I may have to play with that at some point. That could be dangerously fun.
We used to be able to sell Macs into graphic departments inside companies that required PCs by calling them a Unix workstation.
Right. Because they are.
Yeah, technically they are.
They're Mach.
Mach with Darwin and Aqua.
Right.
UI.
So they're a Unix derivative.
Well, it's BSD.
So is Linux.
It's BSD at the very bottom.
Right. That's true. That's very true. So it is BSD Unix, I guess.
Yeah.
These are all versions of the Unix operating system, and it's. Including Windows is the same, right? Linux is also a Unix derivative. So that's the way that works. All right. That music tells us we are done for another week. You've wasted 2 hours of your life with this nonsense. So now you're free. Free to go out and fly like the little songbird you were meant to be. I want to thank Dave Enright and Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. You've been listening to the longest running computer show in the known universe. That's right, it's Soundbites. If you haven't had enough of us, Please join us tomorrow night at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Go to soundbites.org/lounge, and you can join us online from 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern in a virtual video chat session. We'll be back next week with a whole lot more soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. We'll see you in just 166 hours.
This is 90.1 WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District.